Good morning. Welcome back to In Focus here on News Radio KMAN. Back live with you now. Just heard that recorded interview I had with Congressman Roger Marshall, the 1st District, and still have in studio Dr. Daniel Thompson with KC Beef Institute here, and you were able to listen to a lot of that with us, and
you bet.
You're jotting down some notes. I'm sure you have some thoughts on the subject. So again, talking about NAFTA was the main subject with Congressman Marshall.
Yeah, I think, first of all, Congressman Marshall has done a tremendous job. I was fortunate enough to travel a lot with some of the Farm Bureau things the last couple of years, and when he was running for Congress, and now that he's been in Congress, getting to know him and spend some time. I think there's some of the things that got, I guess, kind of pop in my mind as I think of NAFTA. First of all, for farming and ranching and things to that nature, NAFTA over the last 20 years, you know, we've increased our exports in agriculture to Canada and Mexico from $8 billion to $38 billion a year. So it's something that this is a huge market for agriculture, and for us to understand that it's good for agriculture to have these types of trade setups with our two neighboring countries. The other thing that I kind of, as you sit there and you think about it, and that jumped out to me, Brady, was if we throw away NAFTA and we have a decrease in ag exports, and that really is, as Congressman Marshall showed, what would happen to just sorghum. But if that happened to corn, if that happened to beef, if that happened to soybeans, which soybeans is, we're exporting so many soybeans to Mexico, if we see a tremendous decrease in the prices, we have to remember that we talk a lot about protecting the small business. Well, the original small business in this country is the family farm. And our family farmers have smaller war chests than these corporate agricultural entities. And if we have drastic decreases in prices, my fear is that we'll see some sellout of family farms to more corporate farming. And I'm not bagging on corporate farming either, because it is a business. But just an understanding of a healthy farm economy and keeping that economic engine that drives this country alive and vibrant.
Very good comments. And, you know, one thing about NAFTA that, you know, we're looking at this one, Governor Collier's office came out with a press release yesterday talking about NAFTA and throwing support behind NAFTA and urging the president to not go ahead and kind of go on the campaign sort of rhetoric and just scrapping NAFTA. Also in that press release, most of the folks in in the governor's administration said the same thing. President of Kansas Farm Bureau, Rich Belts, also agreed with Governor Collier. Also, you had the CEO of the Kansas Chamber of Commerce joined in on that, and also Kansas Livestock Association CEO Matt Teagarden also expressed the same sentiments. And it really just seems like we're really just taking a new focus to this, because during the 2016 campaign, you heard all the rhetoric of just saying it was the worst deal ever and we're going to throw it out. And it seems like we're just kind of calming down and really taking a more rational look at it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think as mentioned, there are things that we can tweak. And when we look at restaurant groups putting rules and regulations in their supply chain, like thou shalt not use antibiotics or steroids or things to that nature on U.S. farmers and ranchers, and then turn around and import Mexican beef that doesn't have the same regulations, that doesn't have the same infrastructure, that puts some of our producers at risk or at a disadvantage, an economic disadvantage, as far as the performance and the efficiency of the animals are performing. I think that there are ways in that we could be smarter in regulating, making sure that we have a level playing field for farmers and ranchers in the U.S. by tweaking NAFTA. But by throwing it out, I think it would be something that would be devastating not only to farming and ranching, but I think you'd see the ripple effect through many industries, because kind of as agriculture goes, so goes our economy.
Brady Bowman here with Dr. Daniel Thompson, the Jones Professor of Production Medicine and Epidemiology. I'm butchering that word.
Yeah, it's okay. Just call me Dr. Dan.
Okay. Dr. Dan's in the studio, and he's really smart. really smart guy because in his title there's long words. And he's the director of the Beef Cattle Institute at Kansas State University's College of Veterinary Medicine, talking about NAFTA, talking about all sorts of different issues. And kind of going back to what you're saying with the different regulations when it comes to imported beef, when it comes to like imported cars, is that kind of a comparison where like when we import cars, seems to be a very uniform regulation for cars on sort of safety features and those sort of things, but there's not that uniformity when it comes to the animal market.
Well, I think there are. I mean, we obviously inspect all imported beef products or pork products or poultry products, so they're all inspected by USDA as they're coming in the country. What I'm saying is that when we look at specific supply chain. So let's say a restaurant X comes out and says, we're going to have antibiotic-free poultry supply chain from our U.S. producers, which is fine. But then when we look at other countries and look at other regulations, they don't have a USDA, they don't have an FDA infrastructure, they don't have, We may have a voluntary ban on a product in the U.S., such as Zilpaterol, which is a beta agonist, but you go to Mexico, and not only do they have Zilpaterol on the market and able to feed that to cattle, but they can also have three or four generic compounds of Zilpaterol that are also on the market. So they not only have we taken a stance to voluntarily ban it in the U.S., but you go to Mexico, and they have four or five of them on the market that they're feeding their cattle. And that's what they warn like pro football players and things like that when they vacation in Mexico or Latin America and they eat beef, to be careful because they'll come back and test positive for performance enhancing drugs. So the U.S. beef supply is extremely safe. We have some great precautions in place. And so having that understanding, if we're going to have free trade between these countries, we need to make sure that everybody's playing on the same field.
Let's go ahead and take one more. Or do we got a phone call? Let's go ahead and take that phone call real quick, and then we'll go to a break. Caller, you're on In Focus. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
In your expertise, what? Let me turn my radio down. I apologize. And there we go. When you're speaking of the cattle in the area and NBAP, and as we all know, they're coming from Plum Island. They've had some incidents back there of escape, and it can happen anywhere. We don't know. Nobody knows for sure that some pathogen can't get out of there, depending on what they're studying. What is your opinion if that did happen? And as you know, we have a lot of cattle in the 40-county area of Raleigh County. How long would it take to infect the cattle in that 40-county area if something did? I realize it's hypothetical, but a lot of research is on hypothetical situations.
Yeah,
I'd like to ask maybe one other question, so I'd like to stay on. But could you answer that for the listening public?
You bet. Well, first and foremost, we hope that nothing would ever happen to that nature. It would depend on what the infectious agent is that would get out of that. And obviously it would put the cattle within this 30, 40 county region at risk in pretty immediate, pretty immediately. And again, it depends on what the infectious agent was. I'm assuming people would be talking about something like foot and mouth disease or something to that nature that would spread pretty rapidly, and basically, it's a case by case incidence. We would have observation, looking at clinical signs in the area. We would be looking at cattle. We would put a vaccination ring around that, which would be, I believe, right now is from every case is a 10-mile vaccination ring, and we would start at the outside of that vaccination ring and vaccinate to the middle. One thing that I'm very, very against is if something like that would happen, that we would have mass depopulation of herds or things to that nature. And I think that we are winning the argument and the talk with regulators in the USDA and FDA that if something like that would happen, that we would treat the foot and mouth disease, something like foot and mouth disease, it many countries have that. It's set up more as a marketing and trade disease than it is one that is a one that causes high mortality in cattle. So again, we don't want to have mass depopulation. We want to vaccinate our way through it. We want to understand how we can control that, but really the biggest thing is to prevent it from getting out from MBAF, and number two, depending on what the disease would be, how fast it would spread, obviously the highest risk points would be these 40 counties that surround MBAF.
Okay, I appreciate your answer there. I know this is talking about the past. We can't do anything about it. We got the cart before the horse, I think. I don't understand why we didn't put that facility in some area that doesn't have a lot of cattle, that is not populated with a rest home, a 20,000 student university, a 50 or 48,000 population, a 77,000 population county and surrounding counties and growing, and a military base right close. I don't know why we didn't put it somewhere else. It just baffles me. I don't think anyone could ever answer that.
Well, I think we all have had the same concerns. But you do have to remember that the CDC, which is the number one Center for Disease Control that's located in downtown Atlanta, Georgia, and they have the most infectious human diseases day-to-day captured right there in the downtown at Emory, right next to Emory University. So we'll have to put a lot of trust and faith in the people that the good Lord put in the position to make these decisions. And see what we can do.
All right, thanks for the call, Paul. We'll go ahead to our second break, come back more in focus here on News Radio KMAS.